You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Behind the scenes, listeners, there's been a fantastic couple of moments of quick, we've got to queue up a record and
classic student radio, you know, smell of an oily rag, teamwork business there.
Find some headphones,
can
plug
you just
some
turn
in.
Me up in the cans? That's a professional term.
Oh, there we go.
Thank you. That's beautiful. No, louder, please.
Louder.
I like to hear the timbre.
Keep going.
Thank you. Yeah, louder. Thank you. Hi, kia ora.
Is that good?
Yeah, thank you. Hi.
Welcome, Lewis Tennant, former BFM host, former, I'm assuming, radioactive host.
Yeah, like I kind of talked about last time when I came up for something completely different, I kind of, in the scheme of things, had a brief dalliance at B after I'd come back from living overseas, but really, for a lot of us, I think, you know, cut our teeth in student radio in our formative years. So for me, that was a lot earlier than I was at B. I was involved at Radioactive as an announcer and DJ from about 1994 to 1999 in the main, so B was a lot later. So back then I was like a wee youth. I think I was sort of 16, 17, 18 when I first started doing shows.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've obviously written an enormous piece for Audio Culture. Fantastic resource for people that want to find out anything essentially about New Zealand music.
Yeah.
A wealth of knowledge and sort of resource available to you. Just check out online. I mean, where did you start when you were doing the history of Radioactive? Who do you talk to?
Where I started first, before who I talked to, which we'll get to in a sec, was where I started was I got commissioned by Chris, the editor, to write 4,000 words on the history of Radioactive. Now, if you think about this analogous to B, that's 40 years longer in the case of B. I think it's 45 years in the case of Active now, 1976 or 77 onwards. And I immediately thought, man, 4,000 words is just not... Like, where would you start if you had to write 4,000 words on the whole history of BFM? Mm-hmm. What would you get? You wouldn't get very far, would you? There'd be listeners who could write a good 4,000 words on just being listeners of B. That would be really entertaining. Mm-hmm. So I kind of stretched it out, and I think sometimes that's what Audio Culture kind of hope for, that writers will really embrace it as a research project, and I'm lucky through my work that I can kind of palm it off as semi-work. So long story short, I think I wrote 6,000 or 7,000 words, then gingerly emailed them and said, I think I need more words, because I was only up to about 1998 or wherever I was, and then it ended up 11,500 words and a three-section article that you can find on Audio Culture.
Reflecting back on the piece, was there a particular decade which really spoke to you, or, you know, there were some incredible stories that came from?
So to answer the question before that, you answered in that one, in terms of who do I speak to, the other thing was, this isn't one person's story, you know. Another thing about student radio, a complete revolving door of bands, artists, announcers, volunteers, and it's such a, like, again, formative period in a lot of people's lives, especially for those people who are only there briefly, that everyone has really evocative and really kind of definite and defined memories.
Yes.
So I ended up, typical me, making life harder for myself, reaching out to about 65 people from 1975 to now, and I spoke to about 40 from memory, and then just kind of like someone, you know, storyboards a film, bits of post-its and stuff, kind of moved it all around. And to your second or maybe third question, each era was fascinating for its own reason. I think the 70s to 80s at Active were about a bunch of kind of two or three guys starting a radio club back when you could get kind of funding for clubs at universities. And they actually turned out to be entrepreneurial business students rather than kind of alt kind of student radio bods like we know today. They went on to found Ski FM and another seasonal radio station. They're kind of like, to this day, the biggest independent radio company in New Zealand. But anyway, to the 80s, that was a lot about, I guess, Active finding its feet, deciding who it is and who it was. I mean, an interesting thing back in the day then, when you think about how staffing works now, is every year, because it was a club, the staff used to completely change. So you'd only get a manager or a program manager or all those sorts of people for 1 year at a time, maybe two. 90s was about, well, late 80s onwards, kind of neoliberalism and stuff was about the student association starting to go, why do we have this thing on our books that doesn't really make us any money?
Surely, I mean, surely with the grunge happening around the time, that was a big time for youth culture.
Totally, yeah.
Music, you know.
Yeah, so by the early 90s, Active effectively got kicked out of the student union building briefly. You guys are lucky you're still here up in Auckland. Mm-hmm. They eventually, you know, they ended up leaving the building a few years later and completely cutting ties and being like, kind of branding themselves as an alternative countercultural station rather than a student station. But yeah, you're right. When all of that happened, a whole bunch of stars aligned outside of Active that were really helpful, like grunge hit. Suddenly, like early 90s, a bunch of music that was really considered weird and strange for years was suddenly kind of accepted by the mainstream. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that really kind of worked out for them. There's a lot in the article. I'm sitting there talking to you thinking, you know, what can I recall from that? Because I actually wrote it quite a long time ago. This is a sort of a later to the piece appearance about it. Yeah.
I reckon, should we play a song? And I'm curious about some of the key personalities. Obviously, you talked about the people which just treated it or, you know, perhaps had business intentions. But maybe we come back and talk about some of the big personalities that sort of were around the scene. Obviously, Aaron Tokuna.
Yeah, later on. What we'll do, we'll play something from a bit earlier on because I've got it queued up. You can play that bit of Vine Away.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to play this is because Active's kind of branded with being a kind of like you always hear kind of dub and reggae sort of a station. And before that really hit with kind of the more poppier end of that with bands like the Black Seeds and stuff, reggae obviously is quite a sort of a political music. And this is what you may have heard before my time at the station in terms of the sort of reggae getting played. This is a band called Black Uhuru, and they're actually based in the UK, obviously, you know, derived from Jamaica, but you can kind of hear a combination of kind of the black and white, what I call the kind of black and white looking and sounding Thatcher era Britain, and a kind of Jamaican sound here. It's a tune called What Is Life that I've been told on good authority was played a lot on the station back in the day. Thank you.
very tasty.
What is life? Life is a test.
Someone's saying that they saw them at the town hall. Lots of fat joints going around, and funnily enough, a fight broke out. Thought that was funny for a bunch of stoners. But that element is everywhere, I guess.
It's all about the listeners, really, isn't it?
Now, Lewis, Lewis Tennant, we're talking your articles. Was it 12,000 words?
Oh, look, let's not get caught up on numbers. It was long. It was very long. Very long.
But obviously, some fantastic stories. Were there any stories that caught you by surprise about radioactive in Wellington?
Stories that caught me by surprise. Yeah, there were a bunch. The day that the station got evicted was quite interesting. Like, it sort of was turned into almost a kind of a Mexican standoff between, you got to remember, you know, everyone's kind of around student age then, or, you know, typical student age. And a very kind of heated head of the Students Association basically got security company onto campus fairly quickly and evicted the people that were at the station that day. Someone put Public Enemy Fight the Power on repeat on the CD player. And it was looking like everyone had to go home till further notice. And then someone tipped off what was then... Is it still TV3? It's still TV3, eh? Someone tipped off 3 News about what was going down. And reporters turned up. And so there was apparently a kind of... well, not live, but, you know, filmed for news. Should it be on the news later that night? Of the episode, and so things were kind of ironed out, and then people were back on air by the end of the day. So the reason I mentioned that anecdote is that's how heated it got, to do with kind of two factions on campus at the time. To be a little bit cynical, the kind of purse string grabbing end of the Students Association, and then the kind of weirdos that existed in the corner of the Student Union building. You'd relate to that, wouldn't you, Jin? But, you know, but again, so what's happened with you guys is you've managed to stay up here, but I think, you know, every student station, another thing I found with the article is, you know, every student station's got its own narrative, and at the end of the day, not all of them have survived. But I think, you know, I'm not speaking for BFM at all here because it's worked staying up here, but I think for Radioactive it really worked out for them getting off that hill up at Vic Uni. Things were really tense, and I think suddenly being in the middle of Wellington, you guys know Wellington, it's geographically very different. So just even just as a, you know, just that kind of in terms of the environment, like getting off that hill and actually being in the middle of the city marked a real change for them. But yeah, no, there were heaps of stories, and I kind of felt a little bit put on the spot when you asked that, because it is such a long article. But there's a lot of, yeah, there's some funny moments in that article for sure.
It's an interesting narrative. I feel like at some point along the way, some of the student radio network stations, or the old Bennett, have, you kind of almost lose that connection to the students.
Yeah.
But then you realize how important it's, like, the lifeblood of all of these stations, and then just trying to go ahead, forge ahead and foster those relationships again.
Well, I don't know, mate. I can't speak for B, but I think for Active, it wasn't really a student station by the 90s. Like, most students were listening to whatever the commercial station was of the day. Like, you know, you only had to go to a toga party and see how many people were there compared to the more alternative gigs. So the whole thing Active did that was, I think, good for it at the time was reposition itself as a counter-cultural station rather than a student station, okay? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, is this irony? I always worry about using that word because people always say people use that word wrong, but ironically, hopefully, grammar Nazis don't hit me up, VUWSA actually ended up creating their own radio station many years later, which I think since defunct, so, you know, anyway.
Counterculture just bubbles away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you guys have got listeners that have been listening for decades, right? Mm-hmm. Who probably finished their BA in political science in 1982, but they're still listening.
Yeah. 5395, let us know where you're listening from.
Yeah.
Out there. Or you 1982 listeners. Now, you brought in some more tunes.
Yeah, okay, so a little bit indulgent. I mean, that one was a bit of a broad brushstroke.
It was so good.
Talking about the era that I was there, so... another thing that happened related to you, you know, we're talking about what changed, and we talked about grunge and kind of basically like alternative becoming mainstream. I think there was even a joke in The Simpsons about that. Wasn't there Homer Simpson
going to Lollapalooza?
Hi, I'm Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. Homer Simpson smiling politely. So, so also around that era, not only New Zealand music started to get a bit more of a foothold. You've got to remember, even by mid-late 90s, commercial radio was only playing 2% New Zealand music, and it was basically Crowded House or another Finn band or Poirier, okay? So Active, and I'm preaching to the choir here with BFM, was the only outlet for a lot of local music, and especially Wellington music. And you guys might have heard of Gerald Dwyer, who was in Flesh Device, started the Wild Rock Show on Radioactive, managed two very important bands, She Hard and Head Like a Hole. And then Aaron Tokina kind of came from that scene, as a bunch of guys did later in the 90s. So Aaron sprouted as one of the most incredible musicians I think Wellington's ever seen, perhaps New Zealand. Yeah. And this Weta album eventually came out. So I just realised you've got it queued up. So the wee anecdote I want to talk about with this is that a testament to student radio, a woman named Angela, you've got to remember, this is at a time, mid-late 90s, when putting out a CD was a dark art. Like, knowing someone with a CD burner was like knowing someone with a full recording studio right now. She put out a compilation called Infocity Overground, and I tried to get the original version of Weta's Calling On from that, which I got from Clinton the drummer today, but he sent it to me on Facebook. You can't download the audio. So we'll play the original version. But the point being is that tune was kind of knocking around on Active for years before it ended up on this album. And this, I'm playing this also because I talked to Aaron on my podcast about 2 years ago, and then he died a week later. First time I'd seen him in 20 years. I was supposed to go out and hang out with him again after that. There's a whole bunch of stories around this, but great tune, really, last couple of points on it. Great tune, really speaks to me about Wellington, about Radioactive, about the power in student radio supporting New Zealand music, about that era in my life, but also what Aaron told me on my podcast, which makes total sense, which is why I want to play it today, because a lot of the listeners would have already heard it, is I said, what's this sort of tune about? And he kind of brushed it off. Oh, it's not about much, blah, 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 you know, in a sort of Camp Aaron way. But then he says, it's a karanga. Is that the right word for when you welcome someone onto a marae? So, it's the call and response on the marae is what the song is. So when you hear it again right now, listen to it in that context. That is what him and his brother are battling out between them in this tune. Sending out, calling on. Sending out, calling on. Think about that welcoming procedure on the marae. Great tune.
What a massive scorcher of a tune.
Yeah, and one of those records that's ended up, you know, on high rotate on commercial radio, but why not? A good tune is a good tune, I'd say, you know. I'd say.
Now, what other stories of Radioactive do you have to share with us?
What other stories? Tennant,
because you've got a couple of articles up on audioculture.co.nz that people can check out.
Okay,
I mean, the Student Radio Network, the old BNet, I mean, it's a force to be reckoned with.
Totally.
It's like a cultural...
So it's 1976. When was B? B was like 1960-something, wasn't it? 69 years.
We're into our 50s at the moment. We can't even remember how old we are.
That's right. Well, that's your 50s. 76 takes a little bit longer to pee. 76 to... now, so Radioactive is the same age as me. I'm just buying time here as I think about other stories. I'm trying to pick a different era. Through the latter part of the no, let's go late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay,
when all the stars had aligned, New Zealand music had gone overground. I think by then the commercial stations had agreed to voluntarily play 20% New Zealand music, but they
John
exceeded
Campbell was
it.
On air at this point.
No, that was well before that. Oh, let's talk about that. Sparky, that's a
is
sort of off-told
extra
story.
Is he the biggest exporter of radio?
Oh, no, Tova O'Brien.
You reckon it's bigger?
Sam Hayes.
Yep.
Samantha Hayes.
Samantha Hayes?
Yeah, Sam Hayes, yeah.
Wow.
I remember being back on holiday in Wellington from Melbourne, and she was like a volley newsreader, and I just was like, it's one of those moments where you just spot kind of talent and charisma.
It's crazy, yeah.
Obviously, I didn't say it to
her.
Say it to her, but I was like, that woman is going to, young woman at the time is going to go somewhere, and she did.
That's one of the interesting things about hanging out around here. Some people just have it. You know, some people come through and it's like, all right, you'll see them on the news like 3 months later.
I will quickly tell the Sparky plug friendly brain story, which is John Campbell and Jim Scott, because it's really off-sited in histories of Active, but it's often only partly told. So basically in the late 80s, I think, through to the early 90s, Jim Scott, who'd been at the station for years and was still there, ended up doing a show with his son up until recently, Friday Drive, which was lovely. He and John Campbell, who'd never done radio before, never had aspired to do any kind of media, Jim somehow roped them in. They did a thing called the Alternative Rugby Commentary, which I think's what...
The OGs, the original.
Well, I think the ARC and all of that kind of borrows from that, but they don't really acknowledge that, which is fine. Obviously, they're not too fussed about that,
I think they
Jim
did. They did. They Great. Did a massive... there's a... Shortish docker on the SRN.
Great. They talk about stiffies a lot. So you've got to remember that New Zealand was much more oppressed culture then. So rugby commentary was anything but two people talking about players' stiffies and so on at the time. And I remember listening to it when I was really young. It was just like great kind of controlled anarchy. I mean, one great quote I got for the article was from kind of Active's Rick Breeze, you know, the kind of long-term tech guy at the time, Mark Roxburgh, who said the only reason that they didn't get broadcasting standards authority complaints for their rugby commentary is that anyone who would have complained was listening to the actual commentary, right? But anyway, it's a great story in that it's that sort of being discovered thing, like... Someone from Radio New Zealand or Radio National at the time was listening to it, and it was a hoot, because often like-minded people, you know, would listen to that rather than the main commentary, right? And so they offered John Campbell a cadetship at RNZ. So the broader point of that story is, you know, John Campbell, as far as he tells it, wasn't looking to be in media. He wasn't sort of following that area of inquiry. And then this cadetship at RNZ, via this guy from RNZ hearing him talking about stiffies on Radioactive, led him to being the singular broadcaster.
Good.
Led him to being New Zealand's, you know, New Zealand's kind of national treasure of a broadcaster now.
So good. There's so many good stories.
Great
like
stories.
That.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so if people, I guess we can clock out there.
We can. So all I'll say is, like, I don't know about you guys, but often you're most critical of your own work. But I'm really proud of that article. It took me a long time to write, and it was kind of a huge task, piecing together all these different voices, because there's not really any actual, a lot of written history about the station. So if you want to have a hoon on it, just Google Radioactive Audio Culture, and I think that's probably the quickest way that it'll get you there, dear listener. And even if you don't know anything about Wellington Radioactive and you're listening to B, you're a kindred spirit, and you'll get a lot of the stories. They're transferable to the station and to broader culture, I think. Thank you for having me, bro.
Well, fantastic. I feel like we should go out on one last Wellington tune. It's like, oh man, where do we go? Big Wellington bands.
I'm out, mate. The pressure's on you now.
Shit. Okay, I'm just gonna go with a huge, massive classic.
Yeah, that's what I just did as well. Is this like a sound clash?
Where are we? Here it is. Here. Okay. Yeah. All right. I could almost sign off. I'm gonna play the song. It's so long.
Oh, how long is it? Oh, it sounds like it's Fat Freddy's then. Oh no. That's right. You do a DJ set with these guys. You play two songs. You get your whole hour's pay.
Thank you, Lewis.
All right.
Amazing.
Thank you. the music. I love the music. The music is me. The music is you. The music can be something we do. The music is good and music is right, and music can stand strong right through the night, and music can hold you, music can keep you safe from harm and her beautiful arms. Music is you, the thing we do, it's the thing we do, it's the thing we do, it's the thing I do to get me through. It's the thing I do to get me through. It's the thing I do to get me through. It's the thing I do to get me
on 95 BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz. It's just fascination.